it is to be able to share this evening with you today. I am very pleased to be here and to have a chance to share some thoughts. I want to thank Beyasa Singh for inviting me, and Freddie and Comrade Ali Mala, all of you at the Canadian Shia Muslims Organization, to my fellow panelists, to my chair. I want to just share a few thoughts with you this evening, starting with a little bit of a discussion about our foods, about Jerusalem, in recognition of this day, and from the perspective of the contemporary situation regarding Israel's occupation of Palestine. But I also want to extend the discussion a little bit in the brief time I have with you after a long day and a long evening to talk a bit about the context of Jerusalem's occupation in the context of apartheid and Zionism, and also I have a few minutes to share with you a few observations from a recent trip I was privileged to be able to take to Beirut in Lebanon last July. So let me start with talking about Jerusalem. Jerusalem is considered to be the most holy city in the world. It is also an occupied city, where the indigenous Palestinian population lives in constant fear of harassment and heavily armed soldiers. It lives in the threat. Every Palestinian in Jerusalem lives under the constant threat of arrest, of torture, and of deportation. The west side of Jerusalem was occupied in 1948 with an army that was to become the military wing of the Israeli state. The east side of Jerusalem was occupied during 1967, during the Six-Day War. And if you have the opportunity to travel to Jerusalem, which unfortunately Palestinians don't, but I was privileged to be able to go there in 2005, and if you have the eyes to see, the basic reality of Israeli military occupation is incredibly obvious. For Palestinians who live or work in Jerusalem, every day involves navigating the restrictions of the Israeli state. Ramallah and the occupied West Bank is only 10 miles from Jerusalem. This is a distance that normally would be insignificant for a metropolitan city, but it often takes 2 hours each way. For many Palestinians, simply going to work involves crossing the checkpoints just south of Ramallah. And on a so-called normal day, you line up in your cars and your taxis, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait. And the only thing you think about, the only thing you see, is the face of occupation. When you reach the checkpoint, you're questioned by heavily armed guards carrying their loaded machine guns. And then you are asked to explain your reasons for departing, where you are going, the nature of your business, when you will return. Your car may be pulled aside for further questioning and more detailed interrogation. You may have to empty your pockets, raise your hands, take your shoes off. You may be turned back, or you may be arrested on suspicion. Jerusalem is occupied, and Jerusalem is also contested territory. The reason Jerusalem functions under this type of reality is because of the nature of the Israeli state. It's very clear from the rise of the new democracy movement in the Arab Spring that Israel's so-called claim that it is, quote-unquote, the only democracy in the Middle East has been absolutely and totally revealed to be the lie and rhetoric of falsehood that it always has been. Our Canadian government, not least, of course, under the administrations of Canadian Prime Minister Stephen Harper, has shamefully been one of the most staunch defenders on the planet of Israel's undemocratic practices. For shame. Absolutely. So what kind of state are we dealing with in the state of Israel? If Israel is in fact a modern liberal democracy, this means, as imperfect as all liberal democracies are, there are a few rules. There are a few rules that are established by the common function of the logic of liberal democracy. And in international law, and particularly since the fall of apartheid in South Africa, racialized separation of citizens and residents of the region has been identified formally as a no-go. So Israel's basic separation practices are clearly apartheid practices. There is no recognition of the right of one vote for every citizen. There is no equal access to land, employment, or education. There's no adherence to international law as described by the United Nations and the International Court of Justice. So what kind of state then are we talking about? We're talking about a state that is exactly like the apartheid state of pre-1994 South Africa. Obviously there are differences among states, but the legalized racism is a common feature. But the difference is that the apartheid state used the term, it's an Afrikaans term, apartheid, to self-identify itself as an apartheid state. Israel is an apartheid state that refuses to identify itself in its own words. But I'm a political scientist by training, and rarely do we have a method that we teach our students, and you figure out a state by asking its politicians what kind of a state you think it is. That's not a normal practice, and so we shouldn't assume that that's a normal practice in the case of Israeli apartheid. So we have a problem here. We have a problem that we've talked about, that other speakers have talked about, and it's a problem with Zionism. Zionism is obviously not the same thing as Judaism.
Yes.
Judaism is a religion or a theology. One can convert in or convert out. One can be a believer or not a believer. It's a set of ideas. It's a set of beliefs. Zionism is a political view. It's not a faith-based ideology. It's a political view. It's an ism, like any other ism. Communism, socialism, anarchism, Marxism, liberalism, we teach these isms. Zionism is one of those. And it can explain, as the Palestinian-American author Edward Said says, if you explain Zionism from the perspective of its victims, it's quite clearly a political view. And it's quite clearly a view that is about occupation and colonialism, and is based on that extension. But the problem is, as Said states, Zionism is understood differently in the West than it is in the East. And in the West, because there has been another form of extreme racism that we have spent a lot of attention to, which is anti-Jewish racism, misappropriately termed anti-Semitism, because of that phenomenon, because of the phenomenon of the West's inability to deal with difference, the way in which the occupation of Palestine has been construed is if it is somehow reparation or compensation for another form of racism. And this absolutely makes no sense. You can't solve racism with racism. You can only solve racism with anti-racism by holding hands and standing together. And fighting against the racism wherever you are and wherever you live. So just to conclude, I want to tell you a little bit about the phenomenon of apartheid Israel in terms of some of its neighboring states. During the last week of July, I had the immense privilege to be invited as a speaker to the Summer University of Palestine, organized in Beirut. It was organized by the Viva Palestina movement in London, England, the principal leader of which is our friend and ally, George Galloway. And the week-long university, this is the second of an annual event, takes place in Beirut with a view of educating and training activists who have been traveling on the convoys to break the siege of Gaza. And it was a remarkable event. There were about 17 different countries represented. And in the midst of sort of long days of seminars and discussions, we also intermittently had trips and visits that were organized by our Lebanese guests. And I had the opportunity to travel to the small village, the hillside village of Marun al Ras. And this is a village in Lebanon that's about 120 kilometers southeast of Beirut and about 0.5 of a kilometer from the Israeli border. This village was a battleground of Israel's assault on Lebanon in 2006, but the resistance successfully held back the Israeli forces, which meant that I had the privilege as a visitor to be standing on Lebanese soil and not to be standing on Israeli soil. On May 15th of this year, the anniversary of the Nakba, or the catastrophe when Israel was established in 1948 in an armed wave of ethnic cleansing, Marun al-Rus welcomed a movement of 75 to 100,000 Palestinian refugees living in Lebanon. These were part of the 248,000 Palestinian refugees who live mostly in squalid ghettos, walled refugee camps within Lebanon today. These Palestinians, men and women, young and old, were demonstrating that they were tired of waiting and they wanted to go home. But on that day, Israeli snipers opened fire, killing 9 Palestinians and wounding more than 120. And a memorial was erected in their memory that I had the privilege to be able to attend with the Summer of the University, and we put a wreath on their martyrs' memorial. Two of these martyrs were Ahmed Abu Shakana, 18 years old, and Adal Rahman Zaha, 21 years old. I learned their names because I had the opportunity, also as a result of my the hosts of our Lebanese hosts, to take us to a Palestinian refugee camp where they had lived their lives in Ain Hinnawa. This is an area that is an L shape, 1 kilometer long and 0.5 kilometers wide, where 750,000 Palestinian refugees live in absolutely destitute poverty, with no rights and with no state. I am Jewish, and by an act of accident, political construction, I have the so-called right to live as a settler in Palestinian-occupied Israel. I reject that right, and I would gladly live to see the fall of Israeli apartheid.